Welcome to Season 2, Episode 1 of We Are Liverpool with Peter McDowell, Jan Mulby and me, Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Life's changed a lot for you, Trent, in the last couple of months.
What do you mean, just a haircut? The manager just pulls me on the pitch in Singapore. Congratulations, you're the vice-captain of Liverpool Football Club. That anger and that disappointment from last season, that can't happen again. We all know what it takes to be successful. That was drilled into the new players. I just got this feeling that there's something very special going on.
Is Everton or Manchester United for you then?
Oh, that is a hard one.
That's right, we're back with a brand new series with a new co-host and a fantastic first episode for you to enjoy with our new vice captain. We're going to get into our exclusive chat with Trent Alexander-Arnold very shortly, but before we do, a quick message to remind you that you can catch up on all shows from our previous series wherever you get your podcasts, and by giving us a follow, you'll be sure to never miss a new one as soon as they drop. Right, let's get into the show. This is what happened when Trent Alexander-Arnold joined us. And welcome back to a new series of the We Are Liverpool podcast. We've got an adopted Scouser that's sitting alongside me for this series as well, which I'm really looking forward to, and a bona fide Scouser alongside as the Scouser in our team in Trent Alexander-Arnold, vice-captain of Liverpool. I'm just wondering, do you need a new song now? Curtis Jones making the strides he has done over the last couple of years.
I know. Yeah, potentially. I mean, he's playing every week, so I think... maybe we can share the song. Rather than just me having it. But no, it's good. I think it's always a good sign when you've got multiple on the team. You know, I always grew up watching not too many ones in Karen Stevie. So hopefully we can kind of bring that feeling back. This is what I had growing up.
Are you looking forward to this, Jan? Because I know you're too young to remember it, but you've seen the videos, Trent. He was a great passer of a ball. But you were saying when we were chatting before, this lad's on a completely different level.
Yeah, I think so. I always wonder, what gives you the biggest satisfaction? Is it the sort of technical bit about being a passer, or is it the vision?
Both, really. Both. I think they both go hand in hand. But I've always said the most important thing is the vision, because you need to see it to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. If you can't see it, you'll never do it. Whereas if you can see it, you've still got a chance of doing it. So I think the foundation for any pass... what at all is the vision that goes into then the decision, and then you pick your technique and then try and execute.
One pass this season, Aston Villa down the line for Moat, you remember it?
Yeah.
For you, that is a pretty straightforward pass, isn't it? But the pass wasn't enough, was it? You couldn't help yourself, could you?
Nah.
You just had to put a little bit on it, didn't you?
Yeah.
And that's the bit where I love that, because you're thinking... That's an easy pass, so I'll just, you know, make the buffer even easier for him.
Yeah, to be fair, I do like, I think, not in an arrogant way, but it gets to a point where, not that the passes get too easy, but you need to kind of test yourself and put a little bit on it, whether it's, I mean, you push yourself to your limits and it's like, okay, I know I can play it in behind and I know I can get it there. But then how can I make it easier for him? How can I make sure it's properly in his stride? How can I make sure the spin on the ball's not going to affect his first touch, and it can keep his momentum when he's running at pace? And all these things start going in your head, and it's, you test yourself to make it the best possible pass, I think.
I know that pass is not played to make you look better. Mm-hmm. It's to help him, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that's the kind of, you know, because it's a split second, isn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't quite feel like that when you're on the pitch, because sometimes you feel you've got all the time in the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
But people watch and they go, wow, how quick did he make that decision? Yeah. I just love decisions like that.
Yeah, a lot of the time as well, it's... I mean, sometimes you can overdo it as well. You know, there's times when you'll see a through ball, you try and thread it through, but your thought process is... I want it to be so perfect that he doesn't have to break stride, doesn't have to do this, that, and the other. And then by doing that, you put too much pace on it, or you underhit it, or you overhit it, and, you know, the pass is then not a good pass, and it gets intercepted, or it runs through to the keeper. Whereas it could have just been a simple ball over the top. And when you overthink it, it can go wrong.
Let's go back to the Scouts theme as well. We will revisit kind of the early points in your career, but having come through from the very start and played against the good Everton teams as well on your way through, idolise some of the Scousers that have come through the system as well. Why do Liverpool produce so many good players as a city?
I think it's just a love for football within the city. I can only really judge off my experience, and it was all my mates, my brothers, the people I was around. It just dominated everything. Mm. It's all that we all spoke about. We all lived, breathed it. It was, but that was normal. It's not until you, like, you get exposed to the bigger, wider world and you're like, in fact, there's more going on.
Yeah.
In the city, it's like football's everything. It's all you speak about. There's Liverpool, Everton, the results on the weekend, teams, the transfers, who's good, who's bad, and everyone's got an opinion. And then everyone's trying to make it as well. You know, everyone wants to be a footballer. So I just think it's the love for the game, and it's all we know. It's not, no, it's not added pressure, but it's like you enjoy it. Still to this day, it's just all I've ever known is just football every single day. I'm still the same now. Just live, breathe it, watch it, do everything around football. It's just not normality to me.
But do you think it's a driven city? I mean, I'm an outsider. I came in 1984, and it's a driven, competitive city, isn't it? Liverpool generally.
I think that you can see that with the players that have come through, especially. I think, you know, the players that I remember growing up was, you know, Gerrard, Carragher, Rooney, probably likes me, Curtis. I think, you know, you strip back the football and talent that's there, you kind of get the same kind of player, just the competitive, like, it's not just like a technical, it's like we've just got that nasty grit and determination. We'll run for a brick wall just to win the game.
What would you be like if, say, for instance, you were an under 9 and lost against Everton? What would your weekend be like after that? Probably didn't happen that often, but...
It didn't happen too often, but, like, because it's such a small city and, like, everyone knows everyone, there was lads I was going to school with that were playing for Everton, and, like, there was lads I was going to school with that were playing for us as well. So it was so competitive that it was like, I was up against people I was going into school the next day against, and I was like, there's no way I can lose this. It's not, there's no way. You know, like, it's something that's so personal to me. I can't have, like, my pride won't let that happen, and I'll do anything it takes. So that's kind of where it all stemmed from, was just that hatred to lose was just unbearable for me. That feeling of losing was just like, just dented my pride so much. It was like, I'd do anything not to have that feeling.
So is it Everton or Manchester United for you then?
That's a tough one. That is a hard one. Difficult, because I think when I was growing up watching the first team, it was always United dominated everything. So naturally, as a Liverpool fan, I had that dislike towards them. They won everything. It was like they dominated. It was always them. But from a personal one, I knew a lot more Evertonians. I was around them. It was a lot more intense with them, a lot more interaction. Like I said, I was going to school with a lot of players that were there, and that rivalry grew, like, on a personal level from young. But I think if I was watching the first team and I was watching the likes of Stevie and them boys, I'd always want them to beat United more than Everton. That's the way I seen it.
Life's changed a lot for you, Trent, in the last couple of months, hasn't it? Is it possible to articulate how much?
What do you mean, just the haircut?
Not the haircut, no. That was the last thing.
Just the haircut.
The haircut was at the start of the change, wasn't it? But you know, the change of responsibility, senior player now, vice captain, losing a lot of the influences you had in that early part of your career.
Yeah, it was. Oh, it's been a big change. I think it's one that I've had to look in the mirror a lot and, you know, kind of step up to the position and the role. It all really began at the end of last season for me. It was, you know, I put a plan in place to make sure I was coming back in the best possible shape. I was taking it seriously. I think in previous seasons, without, you know, I mean, throwing myself under the bus, but I've seen off-season as off-season, and, you know, I do my runs and I do my program, but on my head, I've got three, four weeks of pre-season to really get ready for the season. You know, before that, it'll just get it ticking over a little bit and then head into pre-season. Whereas this time, it was, I need to come back and I need to be in the shape that, you know, if the season was to start on the first day of pre-season, then I'd be ready to start that game and play 90 minutes. And that was my mentality. You know, I put that in the summer. felt different as well. You know, coming back in, I felt like a man. You know, things happened within the club, the players left, and, you know, Hendo obviously, and then the positions become available. Who knows what would have happened if he was still here. But I think no matter what, I think I was prepared for what was to come, and I put myself in a position because of the mentality of what I had. And it was, you know, on a personal level and as a team, I think last season really motivated us all, especially me. The way I see it, last season's was unacceptable from a personal point of view and as a team. You know, we are a club that needs to be in Champions League football every year, so to not be in that this year is a disappointment, and that can't happen again. And that's what my mentality was.
What made you make those changes? Did you just feel that there's an opportunity because you thought one or two senior players might have left, or did you just feel like the next step in your career?
It felt like taking ownership and taking responsibility for what happened last season on a personal point of view, rather than, you know, using excuses and saying, you know, it's a team game, it takes the whole squad and we all let each other down. It's like, no, I've got to take responsibility for this group of lads, whether I'm captain, vice captain, or not in a leadership role at all. It didn't really bother me. I'm someone who plays the majority of games. I'm someone who has an influence on the team. I've been around long enough now that I don't have the excuse of being a young player and inexperienced, and that I've experienced all the things football can really offer so far. And there's no excuses why I shouldn't be performing week in, week out, and demanding that from other players. And it was that realization over the summer of, you know, you can't just let things happen and just get to the end of the season and be like, we've let each other down and we've not achieved it. It's like, no, that's not happening again. That's the mentality I had coming into this season, was like, no matter what happens, and of course, you know, football is football, and, you know, I can't control everything that goes on, but, you know, as much as possible, my mentality was, I'm not letting that happen again. Whether it's down to me or it's down to lads, just everyone stepping up to the plate, it was, I'm going to do what I need to do to make sure I'm not letting my teammates down. I'm sure everyone else will feel the same way as well, because it's just, it's infectious. It's, everyone buys into it. And I think that's the kind of vibe we've got right now, that everyone's pulling together and pushing forward and churning out results and getting results. I think we've all just got that mentality of we're back and we're fighting for what we want to achieve.
There was that vacancy for a captain. There is a clip that we've all seen that will go down probably in history when you get the armband, hopefully in time as well as you get a little bit older. But there was lots of people in that category, wasn't there? International captains. Virgil was obviously the favourite, but you get the nod as the vice captain. Can you remember the conversation with the manager?
Yeah, I think...
Did you know it was coming, for example?
No, not at all. Not at all. Of course, you know, you're not stupid that these decisions are going to be made. So, you know, but by the time we get back to England from our tours and the season's about to start, you know there's going to be an announcement, or the manager's going to, you know, talk to the players who he's decided to. So we all knew that a decision was coming. We didn't know who or what, because really there was two roles up for grabs, really, because obviously Millie had left, so the vice captaincy was there. And whilst Hendo was still at the club, I think it was just natural that everyone moved up a slot, so it would have been Virgil that was vice. And then Hendo goes, and everyone's 95% sure it's going to be Virg, but you never know. There might be, you know, a curveball. The manager might think it's better to go in a different direction. Whether it might have been a player vote and we all voted for who it was, and, you know, the vote takes us elsewhere. We didn't know what was going to happen. So, no, I didn't know. And then, you know, the manager just pulls me on the pitch in Singapore. And I'm thinking, it's day before the Leicester game, and I'm thinking it's just going to be about, you know, the role that I'm playing again and how it's going to work and how to use it best against their setup. And he just goes on to say, you know, congratulations, you're the vice captain of Liverpool Football Club. Obviously, at that point, I want to come in and say, like, thank you and that. But he then carries on saying, you know, we're going to have a leadership meeting with the rest of the lads. He says, you know, nobody knows. Don't tell too many people. But I'll tell the leadership group tonight. Obviously, Virgil's going to be captain. He was like, well done, proud, all this. So A lot. If you watch the clip back, you see a lot of the time I'm just like, yeah, 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 yeah. I'm just looking at him like, yeah, yeah. Because at that point, he's just telling me, don't tell too many people. Nobody knows. We'll do an announcement tomorrow, all this, that, and the other. And I'm like, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's no, it was a surreal moment. It was a proud moment. And Virgil already knew at that point because he had a press conference with the manager. So I'm not 100% sure, but I imagine... he's seen us talking, and then later on in the session he comes up to me and says, oh, did he tell you? I was like, yeah, and then and he gives me a little hug and that, I think the manager told him earlier that day.
When we did the series last year, there was a lot of talk around the fines, and Jan was saying before he was on the players committee when he was here as a senior player as well. How has it changed? Has it changed? Are you one of them sinister people that will really crack down hard on people who are late now, when maybe you hadn't done before?
Yeah, the culture's changed with Millie going. I think there was an outright, you know, it's Millie who's in charge of the fans, and there was no dispute or discussion about it. He was on top of everyone. So it was kind of like, if anyone was late, it was because Millie's seen you be late, or Millie's seen everyone, and he's around, and he just knew everything that went on, no matter what. He was the one that was finding everyone. Whereas now, I might see someone coming in late. Virg might see someone with the wrong t-shirt. Robbo might see someone do something, or whoever. And then it's kind of just like a culture now that we just demand it from each other. And of course, it's funny as well. You know, I enjoy seeing other people get fined. It's funny if we're all in the treatment room and you know someone's coming in like a little bit late, you can hear someone coming down the corridor a little bit late, everyone's like, oh, and then when they come in, everyone's celebrating and laughing. But, you know, if anything, you know, if it's happening a couple of times, people will be told, look, what are you playing at now? It's not, this isn't a joke.
Are you comfortable with that, pulling players to one side?
Yeah, I think, but the culture that we've got is not, oh, it's just Trent and Virg that has to pull people because they're captain and vice captain, and they're the only ones that are allowed to do it. You know, this is not me saying it happens at all. Great lad. But for instance, if it was Ben Doak that was coming in late, naturally we would all expect that it would be Robbo. It's not like Robbo come to me and says, you have to speak to him, or Govsovic, you have to speak to him. It's just whoever finds it right to say it will say it. And then, you know, hopefully, you know, it changes.
We just finished with the leadership role, but before we do that, Aston Villa, captain, how did that feel?
That was special, you know. First time, you know, leading the team out to Anfield was something I'd always dreamed of. Once you start playing, it becomes, you know, a target and a name, and it's like you're hungry for it. So it was something that I've been aiming for the last few years. Like, that's what I want to do. I want to achieve that. And I've tried to put myself in a position where when changes do come about, I'm in a position to be in a senior role like I am now. So, you know, although it was a proud moment, there's more things I want to go and achieve as well. You know, to be going out there, hopefully, and doing it regularly would be something that be an achievement as well. So it was special. It felt good. You know, family was there. It was a nice moment for us all, and it was good to get the win as well.
Just a quick break in today's show to let you know that the LFC store app is the best place to go for exclusive merchandise, for gifts, and the latest selection of playing and training wear. You'll be the first to know about new products, and there are exclusive offers and discounts on a regular basis for all of our app users. Head over to your app store now, download the app, and see what's on offer today. Now, let's get back to the show.
There's always a certain amount of debate about where you are at your best. How do we see the best from Trent? So take me back to like last season, and I guess Manchester City was the first team to do it, having a fullback that steps into midfield and plays centre midfield. Did you look at that and think, I can do that? Or did you just think, no, I'm a different type of right back, and, you know, I give the width and I put the crosses in? Or
I mean, a part of me did think I could do that, but then a part of me thought, I would never be in a position to have to do that. You know, we were always playing a 4-3-3. I always felt I had freedom to roam, and whether it was to drop into the back line, get the ball and, you know, be like a quarterback or be high and wide delivering crosses. I feel like I've adapted and evolved over the seasons of what kind of player I am, and how I played the right back itself. So I wasn't envious or thought, you know, that's what we need to be doing and that's where I think you get the best out of me. But I always felt I had that freedom anyway to just affect the game. And I think just by playing more centrally, I felt more comfortable by being in there as well.
Could you see yourself as a centre midfield player? Or yeah. Would that take away something from your game?
I don't know. I can see myself playing there, but I think, you know, I've got that, you know, that belief that wherever I play on the pitch, I'm able to make it work for the best I need it to do. And I'll play the position the way that I feel is needed. And I think, you know, under the manager that we've got now, he's given me that freedom and that confidence to have that mentality of go and make it work the best way you think it does, with obviously within the restraints of a formation and a system. But, you know, go and get on the ball and make it work for us.
How's criticism affected you, Trent, during that time? It hasn't always been, you know, trophies. It hasn't always been everybody lauding you as this unbelievable product of the Liverpool system. There's been times when you've had to put up with really tough times as
last season especially, really. At times, difficult. I think, yeah, of course, you want to be winning trophies every year. You want to be, you know, the best player around. You want to be someone who is spoken about positively. But I've always known times like that were always going to come. And maybe from the first 3-4 years of when I was playing, maybe I've set a level of expectation of myself. I think I felt that last season that there's times that I would play decent, but no matter what, it wasn't to the level that I had been previously. So it was never spoken about positively. But I think the mentality I've got is, no matter what, I've always got that self-belief that, and just a normal realization that, you know, I won't wake up tomorrow and not have the talent I've got today. That's impossible. I've always got that talent. I'll always be the footballer that can play football, you know, in the good moments and the bad moments. That is the foundation that I know I've got. You know, I've got football and talent no matter what. It's just how can you keep consistently showing it and making it work. So when that criticism does come, although, you know, it's not positive and it's never helpful, I've just got that mentality that just keep going, because eventually it will turn and you'll show the talent that you've shown before.
So when we talk about all this, let's finish with England then. How do you view that situation? You know, you've been involved with the England squad and there's always a debate again, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, how do we get the best from Trent? How do you look at that?
I think I've always had really good, honest conversations with the manager. Known him since I was really young. Had him, you know, in the youth age groups in England. So we've always had a good relationship, and it's been transparent from both sides. Of course, I would have liked to have played more. I think I would be lying if I said that I wouldn't have wanted that. But I'm understanding as well. I know it's tough decisions to be made. And, you know, I don't point fingers and blame because a decision's been made against me. It's, you know, people feel that same way here at the club when they're not playing. And it's all part of the game. How can I, when I do get them opportunities, how can I take them? And although it's been frustrating, I've always, you know, persevered, pushed through, and hopefully now we've got a system in a way to make that work, where, you know, maybe it might be a different role or a different position, but, you know, it's something that excites me and something that I think can bring the best out of me. And it's a learning opportunity too. I think going there, being around different formations, tactics, and it's an opportunity to learn. I've always felt that brings out the best in me as well. That challenge of having to think, you know, those times you do go into autopilot once you're playing the same system for a while, you know, you just get a little bit too comfortable. But knowing you're challenging yourself on the pitch, where do I need to be? Especially in midfield, checking your shoulders all the time, just always staying alert, knowing what's around you, is something that I think brings the best out of me.
We spoke a lot about the culture and growing through those systems up until the modern day. I think probably one of the best words to describe the current moment is fresh.
Mm-hmm.
You've spoken about the influences that you had with the midfield that you played alongside and the lads that you were so close to off the pitch. You seem to have this great relationship now with Dominic Szoboszlai. Brings a smile to everybody's face how well he started. Yeah. But to be part of this fresh new, almost Mark II Liverpool, mm-hmm. how does that feel?
Exciting. I think you see that. I think that would be the best way to describe this, the team right now. I think from the outside and especially from the inside, it's very exciting. We know we're not, you know, the finished article, or we know we're not perfect, but I think we've shown to ourselves and to anyone watching that we are a very good team, great mentality, and a team that's going to be really hard to beat no matter what is thrown up against us. The foundations are there and we just need to go and build on that. And I'm sure over the course of the season we will build and we will keep working.
When we listened to the players talk, it was almost as if there was a reassurance from within the squad during pre-season, because when you came back, you were all sure that you were further down the line than what we thought you were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we felt that. We felt that. I think if you look in the dressing room, there's no doubt, and you can tell that, you know, the football's not going to be the problem here. That's not we're going to let us down in the end. We're all very good footballers. We've all got that talent. Very exciting young players who can play football and know the game. It's going to be the other things that will stop us. And I think that's what we worked on, especially in pre-season. That's the vibe that I felt that was different from previously, and the freshness and the newness and that fight that we all felt. For instance, I use this example. It was difficult. We're in Germany and we're doing triple sessions up at 7, straight down to the pitch, doing 6 1K runs, and just that alone was difficult. And then thinking, you know, you've still got 2 more sessions after this is difficult. But when you are running around, my mentality was, you know, I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing this for the rest of the lads to make sure I'm not going to let yous down when yous need me to be fit. And that was the vibe that I got from everyone, was we were doing it for each other. No, we're doing this because as a team, when it gets to the festive period, you know, we've got knocks and injuries, we're all fit as can be, and we're playing at the same intensity as the start of the season. And when we get to April, May, and we're still playing every midweek, and we're in a lot of competition still, because that's what we expect from each other, that we're still able to keep that intensity, and you won't be able to tell the difference from the end of the season to the start of the season. And, you know, I think it helped that the senior players, the manager and the staff, we all know what it takes to be successful, especially in the league and in the other big competitions. And I think that was drilled into the new players, I think, which was good, which is, you know, this is going to be the hardest season of your life. And then next season, that's going to be the hardest season of your life. And every season's going to get harder and harder and harder, because every game's hard. And you need to win 30 games to even have a chance to win the league. So that was where our mentality was at. And I just got this feeling that there's something very special going on.
Woven right the way throughout that answer is just this fierce ambition, which we expect because it's Liverpool. But also, you know, almost that you feel that this is a team that can go in every competition. Go right to the end in every competition again.
It is 100%. I think it's one of, if not the strongest squads we've had in terms of squad depth and the quality in positions. I mean, definitely every position's got 2 outstanding players that can, you know, you wouldn't feel nervous putting them into a big game. So I think that's something that we've developed, and I think again, that mentality and that expectation of, you know, and that hunger. You got that it's a fine blend and mix of that youthful experience and that hunger that you get from new young players and, you know, senior players, which I count myself as, you know, Mo, Virgil, Ali, Robbo, Joel, Joe Gomez, who, you know, we've been there before, we know what it takes, and we can help guide the younger players to where we kind of need them to go.
You've been on the winning podiums and you've been there as well, Jan, as a player. It's almost like, you know, people say from the outside it becomes easier once you won the first one. I'm sure easy is not a word you would attach to it, but does it almost become addictive? Like, the more you experience these big occasions, these big finals, you have to have it again. Yeah. You've got to go again.
Yeah, the feelings that you experience there is ones, you know, you'll take to the grave with you, no matter how long you live. You'll never forget the feelings that you get from the big games, the Champions League finals, the cup finals down at Wembley, the title, good or bad, the last day title race games. They're games that you'll never ever forget what you felt at times. So I think it does become addictive. And also, once you experience it, you demand it from yourself because you know you're capable of doing it. So we all have that now. Well, like I said, the players that I mentioned before, we all have that. That we know we're capable of doing it. We've proven it to ourselves. And, you know, we look around the dressing room and think there's no reason why we can't go and do that now.
So does it hurt more when you lose than when you enjoy yourself when you win?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. 100%.
So the taste you take is not the winning one necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's that feeling you have.
Yeah. That's like I mentioned earlier on, that's the motivation. The healthiest motivation for me is just that anger and that disappointment from last season and using that every day to make sure it doesn't happen again. You know, it's a lot easier, I think, to go after something that you've not got than to try and maintain something that you have got. Like, I think the hardest thing to do is to keep your title in football because everyone else is so hungry for it and wants that feeling. And whereas you've achieved it and you kind of relax a little bit and think, you know, we're the champions and this, that and the other. So we've got that hunger of chasing and that drive to go and get it again.
So you talk about being champions.
100%.
Are there moments on the pitch at Anfield where you feel that the team have gone here?
Yeah.
The power in the stadium is just too great for them to be able to resist. Yeah,
definitely. Especially the way that we've played, I'd say, first 15, 20 minutes, if we're absolutely all over them. It works hand in hand. When we've always said that in our meetings, that, you know, if we're up for it and we show that energy, then the fans will buy into that and the same, and the vice versa is the same way. And I think, you know, our team comes to play at Anfield first 10, 15 minutes playing out from the back and we nick the ball two or three times and have good chances. And then we nick a goal or two. There's times when it's 20 minutes into the game and you think it's done. This is done. They've gone. There's no way they can recover from this because it's just like, no matter what they try, there's nothing they can do and there's no stopping the way we're playing. There's no stopping it.
It's fantastic to hear that kind of stuff. And will opposition players say to you as well that they felt that happen in the game?
Yeah. There's times where, like, see, not using any foul language, but they're like, even you can see the looks on their faces. Like, they're looking at each other like, what's going on here? Like, this is... They've just not experienced anything like that. I think that's why a lot of teams don't really play out from the back of Anfield anymore.
But we've seen it from all of them, haven't we? Yeah. Barcelona came and they couldn't handle it. Manchester City have come often enough and not been able to handle it, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is a unique thing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Especially in the European games, I would say. The amount of special moments and the momentum and the feeling that you get from those Champions League nights at Anfield. You know, I'd hate to be an opposition player and having to come here and try and get a result.
You've probably been asked this loads of times, but I'm going to ask you again anyway. What would be the one moment you go back to? So many, I know.
It's very difficult. A part of me thinks obviously the corner and that night. But for me, by far, really, the best moment I've ever felt on our pitch was Divock's goal in Madrid. When it goes in, just that feeling of knowing you've won. Like we're 1-0 up the whole game and we're fighting, digging in, and we're getting closer and closer and closer. It gets to, I don't even know, like 85, whatever, onwards, whenever he scores. And it goes in and you think, at that point, unless they come up with an absolute miracle. It was just that feeling of, we've won it. Never forget that feeling. By far the best feeling I've ever felt on a pitch.
But that's like a moment for everybody, isn't it?
Yeah.
Winning a big trophy and whatever. But personally, Leicester must take some beating Leicester away. You can say it.
Yeah.
I think there's a film called A Perfect Game, isn't it?
Yeah. I felt untouchable. There's times on a pitch.
It looked that way.
Yeah, you feel like you're flying. And that was probably the first game I'd felt that. And I've felt it since in a couple, but that was a game where I felt it was very near to perfection. Probably the closest to perfection I've ever come to on a performance level, all round, on the whole.
One thing we learned in the last series is we never have enough time. We could sit here for hours and talk about the great moments and what your ambitions are, of course, more importantly, going forward. Some quick fire questions for you. Is Robbo still your head tennis teammate?
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Is that good or bad thing?
No, it's good. I mean, we don't win that often. But, you know, we have fun at the end of the day.
Is there a player you played against at academy level and still playing today who's maybe been a tough opponent that people won't know about? Yeah, you always ask that question, who's the best player that never made it almost?
I would say Brandon Barker, played for City. I was 18s. I played for the 21s, first ever time. Anfield, got beat 3-0. I think he scored 2 and got an assist. I came off at 60, and it was like, still to this day, the opponent that I think like just destroyed me, man. Like, I've never had it like that before. It was just like, at that point, I'm thinking this kid's going to be the best player in the world, because I'd never seen someone move so quickly and sharp and so effectively. So I would say Brandon Barker.
Favourite away ground and why?
I'm going to say I'll stick to the league. So I'd say Old Trafford. Yeah. I think just the whole occasion, I love it. It's the biggest game of the season, really. The build-up. And the rivalry around it is special, man.
Player from Liverpool's past that you'd have loved to have played with?
Steve G.
Easy one.
Yeah.
And just finally, I love this because my little lad's 10 and plays a lot of football at weekends. The amount of kids you see going around now with number 66 on the back, not on a Liverpool kit, but on their grassroots shirt. Is that going to stay forever, that shirt number for you?
Oh, good question. I don't know. It's something I've never really thought about, if I'm honest. Yeah, I do get asked that quite a bit, to be fair, whether it's gonna stay or go. I don't know. I think if it was to change, it would have to be a number that I really wanted and I felt like fit. But I don't see sense in changing just for changing's sake. You know, it's something I'm comfortable with. But at the same time, I'm not superstitious, so it's not like I'd have nightmares if I had a bad game with a different number. So I wear a different number for country. So yeah.
Number 10 even for England.
I know, yeah. Maybe I should get number 10. I'll have a fight with Macca for that.
Yeah. Well, Trent, it's been brilliant spending time with you. Thanks so much for being on the podcast.
No, it's been great. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's show. We'll be back again in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, make sure you spread the word, give us a follow, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, there's a host of previous episodes for you to go back over and enjoy before we return. We hope to see you next time. Bye-bye.